Anybody else?
No. So, okay, Rabbosei, we're on Daf Lamed Hey, Omed Aleph, on the top of the Daf. And what you may recall is that the Mishnah discussed the case of Esros, and that was the subject of this Mishnah on Daf Lamed Daled Omed Beis. And the most exciting thing about the esrog is that shel arla, if the esrog comes from an arla tree, then it's possible. And we have to understand that that's going to come up very shortly. But first, let's try to figure out why we take an esrog. Now, you'll tell me that's a mitzvah d'oraisa, but I looked in the Torah and I didn't see the word esrog. I did a word search, I didn't find esrog, unless my computer's faulty. But what it does say is pre-eitz hadar. Now we're about to embark upon a sugya to try to see how pre-eitz hadar means the esrog. This discussion, and I'll tell you where I'm basing myself on, is purely theoretical. It has no practical implications as far as what an esrog is. What is pre-eitz hadar? We know what pre-eitz hadar is. Pre-eitz hadar has been passed on from generation to generation from the time of Har Sinai. So the Rambam wrote a super commentary on Mishnayos, and he has an introduction, and in his introduction he points out that anytime you see in Shas that the Gemara asks how do we know that a certain thing as described by the Torah in vague or ambiguous terms refers to a certain object, a certain entity, and we know through tradition Halach L'Moshe V'Sinai what that entity is, then you have to interpret the Gemara as saying we'd like to find some allusion, some indication in the Pasuk that that's what it is. We know what it is. No one's going to question. If anyone comes along and says, well, I'm going to take a peppercorn instead of an esrog, and we'll see why I would take a peppercorn, then throw him out. He's not shy to call us. But if you ask me, how do I know that pre-eitz hadar is an esrog, that's a valid question, because we always try as much as we can to find the connection between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh. Again, there's no practical difference here. So Tanur Rabban, pre-eitz hadar. How do we know that pre-eitz hadar in the Pasuk is referring to an esrog? And the answer is eitz shetam eitzo upirio shav. There's only one tree that can be described as a pre-eitz. Pre-eitz meaning that the pre and the eitz have the same taste. And that's the esrog tree. Because the eitz itself, that means the trunk of the tree that from which the esrog grows and the branches from which the esrog grows, if you would bite into them, you would get a little bit of the taste of the esrog. Again, I wouldn't recommend biting into them. But what it might mean is that all other trees, the tree itself, from the trunk, through the branches, all the way up, is nothing more than an intermediary, so to speak. It's like a water carrier. It takes the water from the ground. The ground is saturated with water because of the rain that falls. And the tree, the trunk itself, just kind of brings the water up, up, up. The moisture goes up to the peiros, and that's what causes the fruit to grow. The exception to that rule is the eitz of pre-eitz hadar of the esrog. Here, the tree itself is not an intermediary, it's not just a water carrier that's bringing the water up, but that the water that's within the tree, that's what produces the pre-eitz hadar, the fruit of the tree. The water itself that's saturated into the tree, which has a little bit of a taste to it, it has a taste of the esrog. So it means that if I would do an experiment and I would somehow be able to extract the moisture from the tree of an esrog and place it into a cup, and there are other cups full of moisture, of wetness and liquid from other sources, you would be able to say that this liquid is the esrog tree. Because the esrog tree itself is not just grabbing the water and transporting the water, but rather the water within the tree, as it's saturated in the tree, goes through some sort of a change, a metamorphosis, in which it becomes like the esrog itself. So the fruit of the esrog is inherent in the tree. That's called, in the Lashon HaShas, eitz, shetam ha-eitz kitam ha-pri, or eitzo u-pirio shofa, that the tam is equal to both the tree and the fruits of the tree. Avi Omer, and you should therefore know Ze Esra. So the Gemara now asks the following. I have another fruit which grows on a tree, and the taste of the fruit and the taste of the tree is the same. And that's called pilpilim. Now pilpilim, which could be called pepper or peppercorn, grows on a very low bush. And the Gemara Masechta Brachos on Daf Lamed Vav says that if you extract the pepper from the corn, what bracha would you make on it? Now, if the pepper goes into a tavshil in order to add taste, you don't make any bracha. But if you were to eat the pepper itself, again, you'd have to be a real pepper lover to do that, what bracha would you make? And so the Gemara vacillates back and forth. First, the Gemara thinks you make a bar priya dhamma. And then the Gemara says, what about Rabbi Meir? So today, what we have the privilege of doing is studying Rabbi Meir. The Rabbi Meir that's quoted in Brachos Daf Lamed Vav is the Rabbi Meir of our sugya here. And Rabbi Meir, believe it or not, claims that the peppercorn, despite the fact that it's a low bush, is considered an eitz. For example, we have all sorts of bushes, and we're not sure of the status, like strawberries. Maybe strawberries grow in a low bush, that's called adama. Maybe bananas. Blueberries, blueberries. All these things grow on something that's in the twilight zone. We don't know exactly how to define it. Is it a bush and that makes it into a bar priya doma? Is it a priya eitz and that makes it a bar priya eitz? And you and I might think, oh, look who's here, Shalom Aleichem, that the most significant nafkemina as to whether you classify something as a bush, or otherwise known as a yerek, a vegetable, or a priya eitz, or it grows on a tree, the most profound nafkamina is what bracha you make on it. But that's really not true. There's a much more profound nafkamina between yerokos and peros ha'ilam, between that which grows on a low bush and that which grows on a tree. And that is as far as orla. So you recall that orla, the Torah says in Parashas Kedoshim, that the first 3 years after its planting, the tree produces fruit, and that fruit is asur behanah. The Torah says you're not allowed to have any benefit from the fruit of the tree during the first 3 years. That's called orla. And here's the famous shita of Rabbi Meir. The Torah says in the Parasha of orla ki yita pri, when you plant a tree that gives forth fruits. So we have to find the pri. And yet, despite that, Rabbi Meir says that there's orla in pilpilim. That pepper has the status of a pri as far as orla is concerned. That's a very fundamental revolution with tremendous repercussions. Kesanya, like we learned in a brayso, so Rabbi Meir Omer, Limash Mashanemar. Now I'm going to read the whole pasuk to you. In your Gemara, you'll only have part of the pasuk. I'll read the whole pasuk. V'chisavo el ha'aretz, when you come into the land, unetatem kol eitz machol. Now we have to emphasize this phrase here called eitz machol. Eitz machol means it's a tree that is eaten, meaning the fruits of the tree are edible. Shalosh shanim yilachem arelim lo yeachel. For 3 years, the fruit of the tree is called the arla, lo yeachel, and you're not allowed to eat it. Says Rabbi Meir in the Braisa, Eini odea. Why did the Torah have to add eitz machol? After all, the whole thrust of this pasuk is to tell you don't eat it. So if you don't eat it, then you're talking about something that's edible that you would normally eat. So why do you have to say eitz machol? Eini odea, this is a rhetorical question. Do I not know shehu eitz machol? Why did the Torah have to specify? You know, every word, every letter in the Torah has to be scrutinized. It has to be justified. There's no extra superfluous words in the Torah. So why did the Torah have to specify eitz machol? I know we're talking about an eitz machol. We know that the fruits are edible. If you have a fruit that cannot grow, if you have a tree, excuse me, that cannot grow fruit, that's called an ilan srak. And in such a case, there's no Isra Ola, because the Torah says, don't eat the fruits of the tree, and this tree has no fruit. So why do you have to tell me it's an Eitz Machol? Why did the Torah have to spell out that the tree that's prohibited in Orla is the tree that gives forth fruit? Of course it's the tree. And the answer is, this is Rabbi Meir's major breakthrough, that the Torah wants to include a certain tree that's called an Eitz Machol that you would have excluded. You would have said that the fruits of this tree are not included in Oral. That was the Havamina. But the Torah went out of its way to call it Eitz Machol, the extra word Eitz Machol. Eitz Shetam Eitzo Upirio Shava. To tell you that there's some sort of an Eitz, which you and I would have said is not called an Eitz at all, because it's too low of a bush. But the Torah wants to say, no, since the fruit of that Eitz has the same taste as the Eitz itself, or the other way around, the Eitz has the same taste as the fruit that it grows, therefore it's included in the parasha of Arla. Something which you would have logically excluded from Arla, you would have said that's not a tree, that's not an Eitz, that's a shrub, that's a yerek, it's a vegetable, it's too low on the ground, it's not considered an Eitz, and therefore the fruits of that tree are not considered Arla. The Torah went out of its way to add the word machal, Eitz machal, to tell you that there's another kind of an Eitz which can be described as an Eitz machal, which even though you would have logically left it out, we're going to include it in the parish of Arla. And what kind of Eitz is being included in an Eitz machal, meaning the Eitz itself is like the machal, meaning the Eitz itself is like the pri. And I would have said that that's coming to include an Esrog, where the Eitz itself has the same taste as the pri, but that can't be. Because I don't need a pasuk to include Esrog. Esrog is a classical case of Peres HaElon, and it certainly is included in Arla. So why did the Torah have to add the Eitz Machal here? What's the Tama, Eitz Ketama Pri, other than Esrog? Apparently, says Rabbi Meir, there's another tree on the face of the earth that has the same taste as the fruits that it bears. Hevi Omer, which tree is that? Pilpelin. Okay, we'll call it the peppercorn tree. Again, you and I would have said it's not a tree, but now the Torah is elevating it in the parasha of Arla to the status of a tree. Is lefichach, what is the final conclusion? Lelamdecha, this comes to teach you, says Rabbi Meir, shehal pilpelin chayavim bi Arla. That pilpel is included in the parasha of Arla, a special pasuk that tells you that pilpel is included in Arla. But what we want to get from this price of Rabbi Meir is one very basic, shall I say, biological fact, namely that there's another tree where the time of the Eitz is like the time of the Pri, and that's Pilpilin. And in fact, the Gemara in Masechta Shabbos wants to suggest that if you eat a peppercorn, you would make, according to Rabbi Meir, which bracha? Bar Pri Eitz, meaning anything that's included in the parasha of Arla is ipso facto considered Priya Eitz, and therefore requires a bracha Bari Priya Eitz. So Eitz Machal, which is coming as a ribui for Pilpelim, is teaching us that the Eitz on which a peppercorn grows is considered an Eitz. The fruit, therefore, of that tree, of that the pepper of that tree, is therefore considered Arla. And you'd make a Bari Priya Eitz. Now the Gemara wants to say, based on that, we should assume that pepper would be a candidate for the mitzvah of Esrog. This would be really cool. Imagine you showed up in shul. I don't know, in your shul, one person looks at the other? In some shuls, nobody looks at you. But if they look at you, and guess what? Instead of holding an Esrog in your left hand, you're holding peppercorns in your left hand. So what do we do with such a person? Oh, well, he says, well, wait a minute. How do you know to take an Esrog? So I said, what do you mean? The Torah says, creates other. So he says, well, how do you know creates other as an Esrog? He says, Tama is Shava Kitama Pri. So that's why I'm taking a peppercorn, a peppercorn. Because a peppercorn is also Tama is Kitama Pri. How do you know that? I know that Tama is Kitama Pri because I studied Masechta Sukkah. How do you know that a peppercorn is also Tama is Kitama Pri? And he answers, because I studied Masechta Brachas. And also in Sukkah, and the Gemara quotes Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Meir says that a peppercorn is included in the parasha of Arla. It's called Eitz Machal. Why is it called Eitz Machal? Because it's Tama Eitz Shava Kitama Pri. So you want to take an Esrog? Go take an Esrog. I got a cheap deal. I got a peppercorn. They charged me about 2 prutos for it was varnish cheap. Of course, we have to throw this guy out because we know from Halacha L'Moshe Misinai that Pri Eitz Hadar is an Esrog. But on one level, he's right because, in terms of interpreting the Pasuk, you want to say, well, I can derive Esrog from the Pasuk. That, he's right. You have no right at least according to Rabbi Meir, we don't know that anyone disagrees with Rabbi Meir about the nature of the pepper, that it's Tama, it's Ketama Priya. Therefore, the Pasuk itself, if you're talking about the Pasuk, the Torah Shemitzav, forget about Torah Shemal Peh for 1 second, there's no proof that in Torah Shemitzav, the Priyat Hadar is an Esrog. It might just be a pepper. So that's really cool. By the way, a peppercorn is something that's very small. So I was wondering, according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that an Esrog has to be the size of a kibetza, could be that we could exclude a peppercorn under the halacha of Rabbi Yehuda. But according to Rabbi Meir, the minimum size of an Esrog is ke'egos, just a walnut. And now we're going according to Rabbi Meir, so it could be that a peppercorn has the size of an egos.
We don't know from those.
David?
The expression in the written Torah is priyes hadar. Hadar means to beautify, I think. So could a peppercorn be beautified? Is there a way we could think of it as being more special? I mean, that's why we know the qualities and things about it that beautify the eye.
Right. I think the word hadar in this context means that it shouldn't be dried up, it shouldn't be headless, it shouldn't have any blemishes on it. In other words, the Torah is not necessarily committed to say that the esrog is the most beautiful of all fruits. The Torah is saying that within the context of an esrog, relative to what an esrog could be, it should look beautiful. I mean, take a look at this esrog. Here, I want to show you a picture of an esrog here. Oops. Where is it? Okay. Here, look for example at this picture. Do you see that? That's not hadar. That has a blemish on it. And okay, now some of these blemishes are hardly noticeable. This one is like pretty bad. You know, it's got brown spots all over the place. That might be actually kosher, but I have a favorite picture, which, oh, look at that. Holy Toledo. Doesn't that look gross?
That's gross.
Look at that. That's not a pretty esrog. But it is a priyes hadar, but it's lacking in hadar. And where's my favorite picture here? See if I can find it. Oh, the octopus esrog. Have you ever seen an esrog like this?
Fortunately not.
This is a real picture. Isn't that gross? Gosh, I'm going to have nightmares from this esrog. I wake up in the night in a cold sweat thinking of this octopus esrog.
Maybe it got cross pollinated.
Look at this. It's a double esrog. I like this one. Two for the price of one. Sardine shrimps. Any event. So now we have an interesting conclusion here that Priyetz Hadar, you know, there's not just one candidate to be described as Priyetz Hadar, but there's another candidate, and that's Pilpul.
When you first described the Pilpul, you said that actually it comes out of the casing that it grows in. Did I hear you right?
A low bush. That's all I know.
Oh, that's all
I don't have a picture of it. Maybe you have the art scroll. Does it have a picture of pepper?
No. It could be that.
No pepper pictures?
Also would have that.
Okay. In any event, the Gemara now goes off for one line on a tangent and says, "Ein Eretz Yisrael chasera klum." Everything grows in Eretz Yisrael. Shenemar lo techsar kol ba. Pasuk says there's nothing lacking in Eretz Yisrael. So you could find even peppercorns in Eretz Yisrael. So we have everything growing in Eretz Yisrael. So now again, how do we exclude the candidacy? How do we disqualify the pilpul? So the Gemara answers, "Hasam." The reason why I have to exclude pilpul is because of another word in the Torah. The Torah says, "Lekachtem lachem priyetz hadar." Lekachtem. The Gemara says it's impossible to fulfill ulekachtem in the case of pilpul. Why not? I mean, I got the pilpul here. Why can't I take the pilpul? Mishum delo efshe. Why is it impossible? So the Gemara asks a rhetorical question. Hechi navet. Let's go through two alternative methods of taking the pilpul. If we take one little peppercorn in our hands, he says, "Lo min kara l'kichasa." The Torah says, "Ulekachtem." Lekachtem means it's got to be what's called a lekicha hanikeres. It has to be obvious to the naked eye. The spectator has to be able to see it. Now, in the case of pilpel, it's so small that no matter what you do, it's hard to see it. And therefore, that's not the pre-eitz hadar of the Torah, because the pre-eitz hadar of the Torah has to be subject to lekicha de minkara. Minkara means it's got to be nikeres. So the Gemara says, wait a minute, I have another solution to that problem. And that is Ninko Treo Tlasa. Why don't you take a whole bunch of these popcorn, of these peppercorns? And then for sure people will see that you're taking a pre-eitz hadar. So the Gemara says, pre-eitz hadar, pre is in Lashon Yachid, meaning it's one fruit. Is pre echad amarach one of lo shnayim ushlosha peros. Hilkach lo efsha. So we have to exclude it under the law of pri echad velo shnayim ushlo shepes. So the Esra of Ma'a remains the only candidate that is called pri eitz chadar, because tama eitz ketama pri, and not only that, it's minkara, it's large enough that you could see it, and number three, all you need is one pri eitz chadar. This Gemara, by the way, reminds me of a Gemara that I taught on Wednesday night. Not this Wednesday night, but before that, we're talking about a shofar. And the Gemara the Mishnah has a statement that you cannot use the shofar of a cow. And the Gemara has two explanations. The second explanation is because the shofar of a cow has layers on it. Every year it grows another layer on the animal, on the cow's head. And that's called gildi. And the Gemara says it looks like he's taking, the spectator mistakenly thinks he's taking two or three shofars. It's like that Siamese twin Esra. You know, here's a shofar that looks like two or three shofars. And the Gemara says, shofar echad om rachman of lo shnayim shlosha shofars. You can only take one shofar. And here it looks like you're blowing into three shofars. That's what it looks like to the spectator, because that's the way the shofar of a poro looks. Rebbe Omer. Rebbe says, I have a different drasha to derive that pre-eitz hadar is the esrog. Al tikri hadar ela hadir, which means instead of a kamatz under the dalet, because as you know, there are no vowels in the Torah, you could put a chirik under the dalet. A chirik is the same as adding a yud, and therefore comes hadir. Now a deer is what we call a pen in English, a P-E-N. A pen is where the animals move around until you bring them into the Refet, you know, the Refet. I don't know if anybody here bold enough to admit that they worked on a kibbutz. All right, we got some kibbutznikim here.
It was in the Refet in kibbutz Lavi.
Yeah, the Refet in Lavi is kept very well. But I was working on a Refet in a different kibbutz. I'm not going to mention its name because it might be Lashon Hara, but it wasn't kept well, and it was overwhelmingly smelly. But anyway, there's something called a deer. And the deer is where you put all the animals in. Now, when you put animals into a deer, into this pen or corral or whatever you want to call it, so what happens is there are a lot of different kinds of animals. You know, it becomes like a very liberal kind of setting. You know, it's like Yeah. I think I told you once, my wife went shopping in Harrods. No, what's called? Harrods, you know, in London. Is I pronounce it right? Harrods. So I knew it was going to be a long one. I said, Charon, you go yourself, I'll stay on the outside. Then I found out that Bibi Netanyahu had the same experience when his wife went to Harrods, but he had security people. I didn't have any security. But anyway, so I'm sitting outside of Harrods for a couple hours, and I saw, it was like the United Nations. I mean, every sort of headdress and every sort of person, every color of the rainbow. It was that. So the deer, the word deer, which means a corral for animals, that's considered like outside of Harrods, you know, it's like it's a conglomeration of every kind of animal is represented. My dear Yeshbo Gedolim, Uktadim, you have larger animals and smaller animals.
It's because when she goes shopping, all you get to say is yes, dear.
Yeah, that's right. That's dear, very good. I think if either I'm rubbing off on you or you on me, it's getting really punny in here. It's not necessarily funny, but all right. So the deer has members that are larger and smaller, bali mumin, you know, they're very nice animals that have no blemishes. There are other animals that are blemished. Hachinami, so too, the esrog tree is also yesh bo gedolim uktanim. There are larger esrogim, maybe last year's esrogim, and then ketanim are the, you know, the young upstarts. You know, so you have the vatikim, you know, who came on aliyah 25 years ago. You have the new guys on the market. You have tmimim, not too many, but there are tmimim on the esrog tree. You know, really perfect esrogim, and then you have the balimumim, like we saw in the picture before. You know, full of blotches and all that. So that's typical of the esrog. So Gemara's not happy about this. Otu shar peros lesbu gedolim uktanim tmimim balimumim. You can take any tree in the world that produces fruits, and you'll find smaller fruits, larger fruits, older fruits, younger fruits. You know, blemished, unblemished. Elahachi kavar. We have to tweak it up a little bit. What did Rebbe have in mind? Ad shebain ktanim adayin hagdolim kayom. What's unique about the esrog tree is that even before this year's esrog grows on the tree, the new year's esrog, you still have last year's esrogim on the tree. In other words, in other fruit trees, the lifespan of a fruit on the tree is up to 1 year. But in the case of esrog, the esrog lasts even into the second year, maybe even into the third year. Now, I'm not exactly sure biologically what's unique about an esrog. I think, again, don't quote me on this, that the esrog has a thick peel on the outside. Very thick. Again, there's a thin layer that covers the esrog, that's skin thick, that's almost transparent. If you take off that skin, then what you see below it is, I think in English it's, I don't know if I'm right about that. I think it's called a rind. Is there such
rind.
A rind? A rind? Now, the kishkis of the esrog, like in any fruit, is relatively small. And the kishkis, which is called the pulp of the fruit, doesn't last very long. But in the case of an esrog, it's a very limited pulp, and it's very, very well fortressed. It's very, very well protected by the thick layers of the rind on the outside of the pulp. So it lasts from 1 year to the other. But the Gemara is claiming that that's the only fruit in the entire universe that could grow from 1 year to the next and still grow, continue to flourish on the tree. It'll last the second year, maybe even a third year. So that's called a deer. Deer means you have you have last year's sheep and this year's sheep, the new sheep and the old sheep and the blemished sheep and the complete sheep and so forth and so on. So on the esrog tree, you'll see last year's esrogim, the old time esrogim, you'll see the new esrogim, you'll see some esrogim that are blemished, some are perfect. That's very unique.
Does the age of the esrog matter?
Absolutely not. In fact, I'm not even sure if the size of the esrog matters, as far as the top size, the maximum size. In any event, Rabbi Yavo Amar, he has a different drasha. And this is the most challenging of all the drashas. No, I'm sorry. I skipped it. Rabbi Yavo says, Al tikri hadar. In other words, don't put a kamatz under the hay, hadar, which means beautiful, elahadar. So it means the hay has a pasach underneath. That makes it a hay hayidia. It's not part of the actual shoresh, the root of the word. The root of the word is dar. Dar means to live. And this one is hadar. This is the living one. What's so unique about the esrog that it's the living one? Dar shedar be'ilano mishana l'shana. That it could exist on the tree from 1 year to the next. No, notice there's no substantial difference between Rebbe and Rebbe Yavol. They're both saying the same thing. That what's unique about the propensity of the esrog is that it lasts for the second year and it grows into the second year healthy and so forth. But they come to that conclusion from two different ways of reading the word hadar or hadar.
Is there any significance to the fact that deer may come from the same shoresh?
From the same shoresh as what, dar? I don't know. You'd have to ask an expert in Hebrew language. It could be that maybe dar and dira, except we use the word deer for animals, but it's a dira for animals. So maybe it's the same shoresh. I don't know. Now the most exciting or challenging of all the drushes is Ben Azai. Ben Azai Omer Al Tikri Hadar. Okay, so you're putting a komatz under the hay and a komatz under the dalid. Ela idur. Now, this is a little bit strange because the first letter of the word idur, I don't mind the chirik here, but it's an aleph, and in the Torah it's a hay. So that's when Ben Azay adds the following descriptive statement. He says she came beloshen yevani, in the Greek language. Korim lamayim idur. Water in Greek is called idur. Now, what's unique about the esrog is that the esrog needs irrigation. In other words, you have to bring water to the esrog. The esrog is the only tree that cannot produce based on rainwater alone. You know, God created the universe in such a way that trees can grow based on rainwater. The rainwater seeps into the roots of the tree, and then ultimately that moisture through the tree shoots up to the peiros and feeds the peiros, sustains the fruits. But in the case of an esrog, all the water that's coming down from Shemayim is not enough to keep the esrog alive and well. You need to irrigate the esrog. Maybe that's the Yud intervention here. You know, if you want to be a darshan, my father was a darshan, so I have a little bit of that in my blood. So the uniqueness of an esrog is that it's not only divine, but it's also human, the human initiative. Because we have to irrigate. In a natural world, the esrog would not succeed in growing. Except for maybe the first esrog tree. Which was the first esrog tree that ever...
Eitz Hadas.
Yeah, possibly the Eitz Hadas. Excellent. And therefore, Ezi Shegadol al kol mayim evi omer ze esrog. This is the esrog. Shekein beloshon yevani. Now this is a pella to me. That the Torah is using a Greek word. It reminds me of the parasha of Lavan. You remember Yigarsa Adusa. When Yaakov makes a pact with Lavan, so Yigar Sadus is actually Aramaic. Or for example, Totophos. Totophos is a combination of two words from two different languages, neither of which are Lashon Kodesh. So it's a pella that the Hebrew language, which is the holy language with which God created the world, Basorah Mamoros, you know, the combination of letters, each letter is holy, and yet the Torah itself incorporates other languages. And I don't know if there's a moral lesson to be learned here, or maybe it's historically, because all the Lashonos come from the Lashon Kodesh. Lashon Kodesh is the real original language. Or maybe the Torah wants to say that when we educate and we transmit the Torah, we have to make sure to translate it to the languages that are understood. So you and I might not know what Lototophos means. You know, we don't speak African. And we don't know what Idur means because we don't speak Greek. Again, I don't know if Idur still means water in Greek. I don't know. You have to know Greek. It's all Greek to me. But be that as it may, it comes out that the Torah uses other languages. That's just pointing that out here. You know, if anybody says to you, how can you say such a thing? You're not because. You said that the Torah uses other languages. That can't be. So quote to him, Sukkah, Daf, Lamed, Hayamid, Aleph. He'll be very impressed. Okay. So at the end of the day, we know that a pre-Eitz Hadar is an esrog through one of the various drashos. Again, how do we know that an esrog is a pre-Eitz Hadar? That's how local emotion is saying. Shall Asherav Shalir Nidachas Pasul, the Mishnah says you cannot use an esrog from a tree that was worshipped. My time came until the Sreifakai. He too say mechta shiur, it has to be burnt, and therefore it doesn't have a shear. It's considered non-existent. Oh, but now we get to the, shall we call it, the pulp of the esrog. Okay. This is the main part of the esrog. Shall Arla Pasul. So oral is very common in an esrog tree. So the first 3 years of the esrog tree, the fruits are osur vanda under the parish of orla, and the tree produces fruit which cannot be used for the mitzvah of esrog. And the Gemara wants to know why is that so? My timer, pligiba Rabbi Chia Bar Abba Rav Asi. By the way, whenever the Gemara says pligiba Rabbi X and Rabbi Y, what do we not know? Who holds what? Right. Matching. We can't do the matching. So we know one of them said this and one of them said that. So Chad Omar, one anonymous of the two, it's either Rav Chiya or Rav Asi, said, Lefisha ein ba heter achila. Okay, there's a very important Rashi here. Lefisha ein ba heter achila. It's about 15 lines down from the top. Rachmana Omar lachem. Rashi fills in a line that's completely omitted from the Gemara. You know, usually we interpret the word lachem to teach you that you have to own the esrog. But now Rashi says we're deriving a different halacha from the word lachem. Lachem means for your benefit, for your use, something that you can enjoy. Haroi lachem. So let's underline those two words, because those two words, they capture the meaning of this halacha according to one of the two mandi omrim here, as to why an esrog shel oil is possible, because it's not roi lachem. And what does roi lachem mean? Bechol darchei hana'asa. Any sort of pleasure that you want to derive, you're allowed to derive. That's called an esrog. An esrog that's valid for the mitzvah is an esrog which is mutter by the noah. You're allowed to benefit from it. In the case of Arla, the esrog is absolutely forbidden in any shape, form of hanoi. You can't get any benefit from it. Therefore, it's not called lachem. Lachem means haroi lachem. I never would have said it. I learned the parasha of a lekachtem lachem, and I didn't see anything that indicated it has to be edible. Now again, when I say edible, it's a little confusing to me. Honestly, I don't know what edible means in this context. For example, let's say that you could take an esrog and put it to a laboratory test of some sort, just in my fantasy world, and the lab would tell you whether it's edible or not. Meaning, let's say it could measure sourness or bitterness. I don't know if there was such a thing. But the bottom line is, a bird whispers into my ear that this esrog is not edible. Does that mean that it's possible? I don't believe that's so. Ein bo heter achila. What means inedible means it's halachically inedible. Meaning the Torah prescribes you from eating it, and for that matter, from getting any benefit from it. This reminds me also of another famous Rambam called the Nekuda Nifla. That's a famous Rambam. The Rambam says that of all the hanos that you can benefit from an edible, the most profound hanos is achila, is eating. There are many other benefits you can get from. There are foodstuffs that you can use as a salve. Shemen, for example, is edible, but you can use it to anoint yourself. There are many, many different ways you can benefit from edibles, but the primary mode of benefit is called achila. And in the case of Allah, the Torah says you're not allowed to have any benefit from it, and certainly not the primary form of benefit, namely to eat it, so you can't eat Allah. Now, in the case of esrog, I would have said, who cares? Well, I didn't want to eat the esrog. You know, some ladies after sukkahs, they make a jelly out of the esrog. Have you ever tasted it?
Yes.
You like it? Is it good? Not bad?
You have to add a lot of sugar to it.
Yeah.
Marmalade.
It's marmalade, yeah. See, it's very hard to really... But in any event, the esrog, the Gemara says that they used to take bites out of the esrog. So apparently there were some sweet esrogim and you could eat it. In any event, it's got to be halachically edible. In the case of Arla, is ein bo heter achila. That's one opinion. So again, according to one answer, why is it that an esrog shel Arla is disqualified? Because it doesn't have what? A heter achila. It's not roi lachem. Lachem means lachila. That's according to one opinion. Now the Gemara quotes a second opinion. Chad Omar... Lefi she'ein bo din mamon. Now that's a difficult phrase to translate. He should have said ein bo bailus mamon. Bailus is the Hebrew word for ownership. It says ein lo din mamon. So I'll come back to that a little later, because I think the Gemara is being deliberately generalized, you know, ambiguous, so to speak, using a very general term called din mamon. We'll have to see what din mamon is. Usually, ein bo bailus mamon. That's the classical way. You don't have ownership. But in any event, the bottom line is, Rashi says, you don't own it. And why is that? So she'eino shava pruta. Because the minimum requirement for ownership is that it's got to be worth one pruta. Now, if you want to sell Arla, can you sell Arla on the market? Absolutely not. It's worthless because it's osur ba'noah. You know, I would have said the very fact that you can't sell it means that you don't own it, because ownership should be measured. The barometer of ownership is the ability to sell something. You can't sell Arla. The Torah absolutely forbids selling Arla. You can't even give Arla gratis as a gift. And Rashi says, Hilkach lav shelachemhu. Now, interesting, before we said the word lachem means roi lachem. Now we're saying lachem means shelachem. We're adding the shin to lachem. Shelachem means it's got to be possessed by you. And the esrog of Arla, like any Yisrael, you know, it's not something they could have full possession on. So yesterday, I think Michael asked me, can somebody steal Arla from me? And I told him yes. Well, it turns out that I'm right, but not according to everyone. The Ravid sheet is that you're allowed to steal Arla. What does that mean, you're allowed to steal Arla? It means that's not called stealing, because he doesn't own the Arla. Aimbo did moment, according to the Ravid, means literally, kipshuto, straightforward. There's no ownership over Arla, because the Surya no, is not yours. And the support for the Ravid is the Gemara in Kiddushin that says that if you take Arla and you give it to a woman, and you say to Arei Amakudeshesli, Ein Amakudeshes, it's invalid because you don't own it. And in order to be Mekadesh Anishi, you have to own it. The other Rishonim seem to assume no. Ein Bo Din Mama, meaning you don't have a full-fledged status as an owner. Your ownership is a little bit incomplete. You still own Arla, technically. If somebody wants to take your Arla, you know, take, you know, haul off, you know, bucketfuls of Arla, you know, bushels of Arla, that they can't do that. But nevertheless, it's not full ownership because it's Asur Bando. By the way, the source for Yisuri Anon and Bailus is a Gemara, believe it or not, in Bava Kama, Daf Lamed Hey. That's the sugi of Shara Niskal. Shara Niskal wants his Gemara Din, and the Beis Din has decided that you have to take this Shara out to Skila to be stoned. At that point, it becomes Asur Bando. And at that point, it's not yours anymore. The Gemara says it's not yours. So again, let's just review. There are two ways of explaining why an Esek Shel Arla in the Mishnah is disqualified. One is because the word Lachem means Haroi Lachem Lehanoschem, means you have to have a Heter Achila, and the other is that Lachem means Shalachem, it's got to be yours, and in the case of Yisuri, no, you don't have Mama. You don't have a full-fledged ownership over Arla. Kasalka Daite, the Gemara at this point thinks, Man de boy achila, according to the Man Yomar, who says that an esrog requires, that's the condition for an esrog, that it's royal achila. Lo boy din mama. He doesn't require that you have ownership. Uman de boy din mama. The second Man Yomar, who says that you have to have ownership on an esrog, lo boy het achila. He doesn't need that you have to be, that you be permitted to eat it. In other words, the Gemara is now setting up a Hava Mina, and the Gemara already tells us that it's going to be rejected. That's called Kosaka Daite. That it's one extreme or the other. Either you wave the flag of Heter Achila, or you wave the flag of Din Mama. It's one of the two. They're mutually exclusive. We don't require both conditions to be fulfilled. So the Gemara says, if that be the case, then Tnan, we're in trouble with the next line in our Mishnah. Because the next line in our Mishnah is going to invalidate an Esrog, which you're not allowed to eat. You're not allowed to eat, but you still own the Esrog. And what case is that, that you're not allowed to eat it, but you still own it? That's called Truma Tmeya. Okay, so you're Mafresh Truma. And this Esrog became Tame. So the law is you're not allowed to eat Truma Tmeya. You have to burn Truma Tmeya. No one's allowed to eat Truma Tmeya, not a Kohen, not a Yisrael. So therefore, if you're going to tell me that this Esrog has to have a Din Heter Achila, then here it's excluded because you're not allowed to eat the Esrog. And the Mishnah, in fact, says that this is possible. Is Bishleim, I can justify now, remind the other, the one opinion that says, Lefisha Ebo Heter Achila, Shapir. Shapir means it makes a lot of sense. That the reason why an Esrog of Truma Tmeya is possible is because it has no Heter Achila, you're not allowed to eat Truma Tmeya. Ella, but now we're in trouble. Lamandiyom, according to one Mandiyom, says Lafisha Ainbo Din Mamon, which means I dropped the requirement of Heter Achila. Even if you have no Heter Achila, as long as you own it, that's enough. Is Amai, why should we therefore disqualify? Why should the Mishnah disqualify an Esrog of Truma Tmeya? Is you own an Esrog Shel Truma Tmeya? Truma Tmeya actually has market value. Hare Masika Tachas Tavshila. Let's say, for example, you have wheat. And the wheat was separated as truma, and then it was makabel tuma. You can use that wheat as fuel to feed the flames, and therefore you can sell it on the marketplace. It means it has value, and you own it. So why should an esrog of truma tmeya be possible if you hold that you need heter achila? There's no heter achila in the case of truma tmeya, but if your requirement is only what is only Lachem, that has to be yours, Din Mamon, here you do have a Din Mamon. If somebody would steal your Truma Tmeya, he's a thief. Elos, the Gemara says, we have to reject that kosal kedaitik. The original approach has to be rejected. Beheter achilu kulei amelo pligi debeinon. And with regard to the condition of the edibility of the esrog, everybody agrees. There was never a machlokas that we require roi lachil lachem means roi lachem. Ki pligi, the only machlokas is, do you have another second condition that has to be met? The din mamon. Meaning it's not enough to have a heter achilu, you also have to have mamon, it has to be yours. Mar sabar, according to one man, the other heter achilu be'inan din mamon lo be'inan. There's only one requirement in esrog. And that is a het achila has to be lachem roi lachem, but there's no requirement of mamon. Again, because once he used the word lachem to teach you the het achila, he doesn't have the word lachem free to teach you ownership shel lachem. Umar sover, and the other man, the other says, no, we can derive two things from the word lachem. Not only do you require roi lachem that has to be edible, but din mamon nami. Nami, what does nami mean? In addition, there's a second condition that has to be met in order for the esrog to be kosher. It's got to be a din mamon nami, but you know we require a din mamon. So therefore, as far as the basic requirement of lachem, roi lachem, that has to be roi lachila, yesh bo het achila, everybody agrees that an esrog is only kosher, it has a het achila. And therefore, both in the case of arla and in the case of truma tmeya, the esrog is possible because there's no het achila. So that's for sure. However, there's another requirement according to one man d'yomer, and that's din mamon. So now we have to look for a case. Rabotai, watch this. Let's look now and see if we can come up with a case of something that you're allowed to eat, but you don't own it. That's paradoxical. So by way of introduction, that's called Maaser Sheni b'Yerushalayim l'Rabbi Meir. A, B, and C. If you add those three conditions together, you'll come up with a case where you're allowed to eat it, nay, you're obligated to eat it, and yet it's not yours. Because Maaser Sheni has to be taken where? To Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim, you have to eat it. So for sure, it's edible. Yesh bo het achila, yesh bo mitzvas achila. However, Rabbi Meir holds that it's not yours. Michel Gavon. It's Mamon Gavon. It belongs to Gavon, to the higher authorities. Because the Torah is specifying this as a mitzvah. The Torah is saying, you can't enjoy anything from this Maaser Sheni other than Achila. So the Achila is not an Achila as a Bialim, according to Rabbi Meir. It's not that you're eating it because you're exercising your ownership, but rather you're eating it because the Torah commands you to eat it. And the Torah excludes any other form of pleasure or benefit that you can get from this fruit other than Achila. So Rabbi Meir says that's called Mamon Gavon. For example, Rabbi Meir is quoted in Masechta Kiddushin as saying that if a man takes his peros Maaser Sheni to Yerushalayim and he finds a local Yerushalmi girl and he says, Hare Mekudeshesli, according to Rabbi Meir, she's not Mekudeshes. Because again, for Kiddushin, you have to give something that's yours, that you don't own Maaser Sheni, it's Mamon Gavon.
What about fruit in Kiddushat Shviit? Paid Beit Din.
So yeah, esrog is a whole to do esrog shel shviyus. What's the status of esrog shel shviyus?
Well, any fruit. I'm asking. Then I'm eating it, but it belongs to everybody. It's just I have it in my refrigerator because I paid Beit Din for all the expenses.
Right. So that's fine. That's not a halachic issue. But if it happens to be an esrog and it's the seventh year and you want to use the esrog shel shviyus, and the mitzvah of esrog shel shviyus is to eat it b'kedushaso b'tara, then we might introduce Rabbi Meir here. I don't know. Rabbi Meir says in the case of Maaser Sheni, can we extend Rabbi Meir's principle to shviyus? That's Menachem's question. And shviyus also, insofar as the Torah designates it for achila, therefore it's not yours. You're eating mishulchan gavur. But truth be told, I don't believe that Rabbi Meir would go as far as to say that shviyus is mamon gavur. I'll tell you why. There's another element here in the equation of Rabbi Meir, that's Yerushalayim. The fact that you have to take the fruits into Yerushalayim, up to Yerushalayim, and eat it in Yerushalayim, that gives it a special status. Because the Beis HaMikdash is basically an extension of the Kedusha of Yerushalayim. The Kedusha of Yerushalayim expands to include the Azara and the Kodesh Kadosh. Everything starts with Yerushalayim. And therefore, Mamon Gavoah means something that has to be taken into Yerushalayim and eaten there. Like, for example, the Kohanim are allowed to eat from any korban with the exception of an ola. So let's say you have a chatos and oshim is kochi kochim, and the Kohanim will eat it. Zichrei kohuna. They have to eat it in Yerushalayim, but they can eat it. Is it theirs? do they make a kinyan on? According to Rabbi Meir, it's no different than Masa Sheni. It's Mom Gavah. That's called Mishulchan Gavah Kazoch. And then Kodesh Baruch is saying, you have only one mitzvah with this piece of meat, Mr. Cohen, and that is to eat the meat according to all the laws and the requirements of Achilas Kodesh. In case of Shlomo, even Israel could eat the meat. And once again, it's not his meat that he's eating. So I would say, according to Rabbi Meir, that would be a case of Mama Gavoa. Shvius, I don't know. Shvius is a little bit more far-fetched. So now, what's going to be the deal in such a case? The Gemara says the following. Laman diomar, lufisha ein bo heter achila. If you only require one requirement and exclusively, and that is that you have to be mutar b'chari yesh bo heter achila, you're allowed to eat, and you're even obligated to eat the peros of Maaser Sheni. Where? In Yerushalayim, lo sucha lechel b'sharecha, the Torah prohibits you from eating it outside Yerushalayim, but inside Yerushalayim. So Rabbi said, what would be the status of an esrog? Here's my quiz question to you. Of an esrog shall Maaser Sheni outside of Yerushalayim. Is it kosher or possible? Correct. It's absolutely possible because everybody agrees in that case. Ein bo het achila. It's missing the most basic requirement of an esrog lachem or royal lachem. It's not royal lachem outside Yerushalayim. Oh, but now I took the esrog up to Yerushalayim and the Torah commands me to eat it. So as far as din achila is concerned, we have a din ahet achila. Oh, says the Gemara, but l'man diyom l'fish ein bo din mamon, that the reason why you exclude Arla is because you don't own Arla, and the Torah requires ownership, is my sesheni mamon gavah, who according to Rabbi Meir, my sesheni is not your private ownership. And that's what I think the Gemara means by din mamon. You remember I asked you about bailus? Nobody could steal my Maaser Sheni from me. That would be Gzela Mamash, even according to Rabbi Meir. But Mama Gavah means there's another element here in the equation. There's another owner, so to speak. I share the ownership with Gavah. And in that sense, it's not exclusively mine, and it's lacking in what's called a Din Mamon. It doesn't have a Din Mamon. So now the Gemara, you remember before, we didn't know who held what. You know, Rabbi Chiya, Rabbi Asi, one of them seemed to hold Din Mamon, the other one held Het Achila. Tistayim. Tistayim is a very important word in Shas, and if you're not familiar with it, please write it down. Tistayim means, whenever you don't know who holds what, Tistayim means I'm going to prove to you one of the two opinions. And by press of elimination, I therefore understand the other opinion. You know, who maintains, you know, if you want to attribute authorship to a certain halacha, so Tistayim says, I'm going to prove to you who's the author of that halacha. Tistayim, I'm going to prove to you the Rav Asi. Remember, we had two manion. We had Rav Chiya Bar Oven and we have Rav Asi. Rav Asi Udiyomer, he's the one who holds Lefisha Ein Ba Din Mama. He would exclude my Sesheni in Yerushalayim according to Rabbi Meir. And how do I know this? The Omer Rav Asi, we have a transmission in the name of Rav Asi. Esrog shall my Sesheni Lediri Rabbi Meir. You have to add the Yerushalayim here. Okay, L'divir Rabbi Meir. Ein Adam Yotzei Yedecho Vaso B'yantif. You can't get more explicit than that. And again, Yesh Bo Het Achila, because we're talking Yerushalayim. We can only say that Ein Bo Din Mama. And that would have to introduce Rabbi Meir, who holds that moment that Maaser Sheni's moment Gavah. Tistayim says the Gemara, yeah, that's a very good proof. Now again, if Rav Asi is the one who holds it, what? That the reason why Arla is possible is because Ein Bo Din Mamon. Then, by virtue, by process of elimination, we know that it's Rav Chiya Bar Oven, and he's the one who holds Ein Bo Het Achila. Gufa, Rav Asi, Esrog Shel Maaser Sheni, the Rav Meir, Ein Adam Yotzei Yedecho Vaso B'yantiv. Gufa always introduces a statement that we learned earlier, now we want to analyze it. L'divrei Chachamim, according to Chacham, hold that Maaser Sheni is Mamon. Bailim, Mamon Hejot, is Adam Yotzi Dechovasa Biyantiv. What's the deal with Matzah Shel Maaser Sheni? Right? I separate my Chita, or better my oats. Well, why do I like oats better than Don?
Because
it's gluten free. So the gluten free matzah is made of oats, right? You got to get that from England, I think. I don't know. Maybe you can get it here locally. In any event, so now I have a problem because I cut down my oats. I got oats like coming out of my, you know, all over the place, and I cut it down. But I have to separate 1/10 for Masa Sheni. That have to do on the first, second, fourth, and 50 years of the Shemitah cycle, and that Masa Sheni has to be brought to Yerushalayim. So in Yerushalayim, I take the oats of Masa Sheni, I grind them, and I make gluten-free matzahs. Can I use that for the mitzvah of matzah? It's Masa Sheni. Well, Yesh bo din achila, that's no problem. But Ein bo din mamon, according to Rabbi Meir, who holds that Masa Sheni is mamon gavah. So the Gemara says, guess what? That the matzah of Masa Sheni has the identical status of the esrog of Masa Sheni. It cannot be used for the mitzvah, according to Rabbi Meir, who holds mamon gavah. It means that matzah also requires ownership. Now wait a second, Don. You invited me to the Seder, and you gave me matzah. I don't know if it was gluten-free for me. I'm very maker on this. I allow even, spelt matzahs. You know, I eat spelt matzahs. Okay. So you gave me spelt matzah. Is it mine or is it yours? Now we're saying now that it has to be mine, otherwise I can't fulfill my mitzvah. But on Yontif, we don't make a kinyan. So how do I acquire ownership over the spelt matzahs if I'm a guest at your thing? So again, if I carry my own spelt matzahs, so then you're insulted. What, you don't trust my kashrus? You know, I'm treating you like a king. Yeah, I treat you royally. I got you the special, it's this hand shmura spelt matzahs. They sell it in Ramot. I mean, you have to wait online for a month until you can get it. Anyway, that's if you want to eat hand shmura. Machine shmura spelt matzahs, a little bit easier. Also complicated. So now, you're giving me these spelt matzahs, and I don't own them. And the Gemara says that I have to own the matzah. Now, where does it say in the parasha of matzah that it has, yes, to own it? It doesn't say matzaschem, that it has to be your matzah. That's a pella here.
There's a shita that you have to have, it's better to have your matzahs.
It's based on this Gemara.
Okay.
It's based on this Gemara. Because of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir holds that Ein Adam Yotzei Chovoso B'Matzah B'Leil Rishon Shel Pesach B'Matzahs Matzah Sheni B'Yushalayim. Because he requires a Din Lachem. The Divrei Chacham Yotzei Adam Yotzei Chovoso B'Pesach. Now what about the Mitzvah of Challah? Isa, if I make a dough Shel Matzah Sheni out of grains that are Matzah Sheni, and now they're in Yerushalayim, am I chayiv in challah? Because in challah also it has to be mine. But that's based on a pasuk. It says, Arishis ariso se chem. Chem means that's be yours. L'chachamim, according to chachamim, chayiv is b'challah, because Matzah Sheni, since it has a din achila, therefore it's considered mamon hedger, it's your private ownership, and it's not excluded under the law of Arisol Seichem. Maske Flora Papa. Okay, so here's where we'll have to stop because I see it's getting late. So then, what are we looking for? I thought, again, I'm not pressing it, but Sunday and Monday would be good. Tuesday is Erev Yom Kippur. I think that's out of the question for me. But Sunday and Monday, I think we can certainly get together. Is that okay with everybody?
I'm not here every day.
You're not here. Neither Sunday nor Monday.
No,
okay, so you'll have to listen to some sort of a video. You know, we've got to get you a video recording. I'm just kidding. Anyway, so let's meet on Sunday at the same time, same station, 8:30 to 9:30. We'll start a mitzvah with Maskifla Rav Papa. If you can make a note of it, that we're up to Maskifla Rav Papa, because between now and Sunday, we might. Theoretically forget where we're up to.
Would Monday be the last day before Sukkot?
Monday will be the last day. And has everybody filled out a survey? Menachem, did you get it in the email?
I didn't get the email.
You still didn't get the email?
I got it.
Alright, so believe that or I'll have to send you an email.